Hi guys, welcome back to Section. This week we're, in hopes of getting you sort of a head start on your final project, we're going to dive into website development and talk a little bit about security, which we will cover in like later weeks. So the order is a bit different, but hopefully this will motivate you to get started or empower you to get started now if you want to. So, Section 8, woo! Here's our very ambitious agenda. Don't be scared. Hopefully we'll be able to get through all of it. We're going to talk about web development stuff first, because I think that might be more, maybe you guys are more excited about since you just had lecture about it. And then we'll go into security with an awesome demo that works this time, I hope. Anyway, moving on, that's weird. Okay, not clicking the back button. Cool, so HTML, what is that? You don't really need to know the what it stands for, but here it is, hypertext markup language. It's a markup language, so it deals with like prettiness, aesthetics, as David said. It's pretty much the basic building blocks of web pages. That's what web pages are made out of. And as David also said, the elements of this of HTML are tags. The main elements are tags. And those are, they're keywords enclosed within angle brackets. And they're usually paired. You have like an open tag and then a closed tag. But there are certain tags that don't have, open and then closed. They might just have one tag. Like say if you were putting an image, it'd be kind of silly to have like begin image and then end image or open image and close image. That's kind of weird. So, there are those tags too, but they tags are usually paired with open and closed. And here's maybe a silly little image. I guess someone decided to get a tattoo telling people where his head ended and where his body started using HTML, a bit of a joke to lighten the mood, I guess, if you guys want to think about it like that. But here's an example of a very simple HTML web page. I'll point out the elements of this in a little bit, but here's just sort of a starter to show you what this sort of looks like. So David talked a little bit about HTML5. That's the variant of HTML I'm going to be teaching. So all these tags are going to be HTML5 compatible or, more like the standard for HTML5. So why is it HTML5? What's the difference? It's apparently the next generation of HTML, which I believe. It's pretty cool. You can do pretty cool things. They're moving towards like standardization, so HTML5 has standards for media, images, but not just images, like videos, sound, things like that. There are more form elements if you want to create a form on your web page, and by form I mean like ask the user to provide some sort of input and send it off somewhere, or something with user input and then taking that and doing something with it, sort of like a paper form that you might fill out for like an application or something. And with HTML5, you also have this thing called a canvas element. OMG, I'm really excited about this. It pretty much allows you to make graphics, render graphics on the screen with a script, with like a programming language like JavaScript or something. So this is really cool. Really cool, guys. I'll show you an example. Yes, here are my examples. So first, let's look at this Starfield thing. You can notice I don't have to download anything. And this just renders on my window, on my browser. And it's like that screensaver where like, the stars fly past you. Like nostalgia, what? Okay, fine, maybe nostalgic for me, maybe not for you guys. But as you can see, it's dynamic. Like it follows where I move, it knows where I move my mouse and it changes direction accordingly. And I think there's a way to like increase the speed, but I'm not quite sure how to do that. But yeah, this is cool. You can do this in HTML5 and not so much in the other older versions. So let's go back to our little PowerPoint here. Another cool example is Rompetrol. So here's me, this little tadpole. Apparently my name is Guest, whatever that is. And as you can see, it moves where I click. And it's also like a makeshift chat room. So you can type something like, hiya, and my little tadpole says hiya. So if other people were on this site right now and they saw my little tadpole, they would see that I said hiya and they can respond. And it's like a exploratory chat room sort of thing. Cool, maybe. I think it's cool. I didn't have to download anything. I didn't have to install anything. This is all rendered on, Chrome. on my browser using HTML5 and its little canvas element. So that's why this is so awesome. You can do cool things like that. I don't know, I'm a big fan of graphics and images and visuals, so this is awesome stuff, awesome sauce, as the internet communities say, I guess. So, for helping you learn HTML5, or HTML, I guess, here's my favorite site, W3 Schools. And as you can see, if you want, you can just go to like www.w3schools.com, and they'll have resources for other things like just HTML or XHTML or like JavaScript and PHP and all that stuff. But here I've sort of included the link that goes to specifically HTML5, the front page, I guess if you want to think about it, HTML5, since that's sort of what we like you guys to use. Since it's, you know, the up and coming, it's new, it's cool. So, as I said, I'm going to break this down for you, but I showed you like 2 slides ago. Like, what the heck does all this stuff mean? It looks scary, maybe. Okay, so this thing is just like convention. You just gotta have it at the top of your page, of your web page. It, if you wanna know the details, it tells the browser that the document type that we're gonna use here is HTML. In other versions of HTML, there were like 2 more lines of code here that specified like more of the details of the document type. Like it might say like, oh, this is transitional HTML, or it might specify other details of the kind of HTML this page is using. So for our purposes, just know that you need that. Just it's not that hard to memorize. I guess HTML shouldn't be capitalized. Oops. But when I took a web building course, I had like 3 lines I couldn't really memorize and it was messy. So next up, we have this HTML HTML tags, open and close, coming in pairs. It defines an HTML document. So when you make a web page, you also need these open and close HTML tags. And then here you can sort of see that there's a head tag, which every page needs. And it defines the sort of information about that document, about that page. So David showed you CNN's source code, which had like meta stuff. To my knowledge, meta sort of tells search engines and things like that, like keywords or tags, not in the HTML, sort, but keywords about this web page. I'm not going to show you that here. I'm sure you guys can like look it up and have fun with that. But here I do have a title tag. So that tells us, hey, here's my web page. The title is a random web page !! Yay, nay. You can add other things in head too if you want to go look at that. And I'll mention a few others later in some of the later slides. But yeah, as you can guess, this defines the page's title. It sets that little, the name of the web page atop your browser, which I can show in a bit. But so after the head, you have the body tags. This is where pretty much everything that the browser shows you that you want your user to see will be in here. So here I just have the word welcome in bold, as you've learned from David's little example. But here I've made my own. There it is. Let me make it bigger. No, it is not like that. Okay, I will do it this way. So here's my page. A random web page. There's the title. Woo! And it's welcome in bold. Just that. First web page. Yes! So that wasn't too hard, right, guys? You guys can do this. You just need to sort of remember the conventions and what the tag names are. It's like learning a new language, I guess. Except this is sort of in English, right? Head, body, that's in English, right? That's not too bad. Cool. So, that's that part. Let's go into, I want to enable you guys to like write your own web pages. So, I'll mostly have examples. If you have questions about these examples or how to do things, please do ask, speak up. Or I guess you can email them later if, you're too shy to speak now. But so for text, okay, this won't be too overwhelming, but for a bit of text formatting, you might see something like this. So let's go back. But as David already talked about, you have these B tags, these I tags, U tags, and those are respectively bold, italicized, and underlined, as it states in the text there. And then you have this BR tag, which David also talked about. So David said BR is for line break. I just have the habit of, you know, including the slash to close my BR tag, I guess, quote unquote close. And then did he talk about P? I don't think he talked about P. But if BR is line break, what could P be? Any guesses maybe? Yes, page break. P is page break. So if you don't want to just like in a Word doc, you can press enter once and it goes to the next line, or you can press enter twice and you'll have this little space in the middle. I'll show you what this looks like on a web page in a bit. But yes, page break, empowering you guys. And then under that, right here is what David talked about, how to put a link in there. So I'm just gonna link to google.com or something silly like that because I don't have a favorite web page yet. And then unfortunately, I'm not sure if you guys really know, but there isn't really a tab tag to my knowledge, but you can sort of make it seem, you can sort of imitate a tab by using these weird looking things here. So starting from the ampersand to the semicolon, that's one non-breaking space. So if you put a lot of them together, it'll actually put a space there and not condense it into just one space, if that makes any sense. Okay, let me show you the web page and maybe you'll get it. Okay, so here's a web page. Okay, so notice how there's a line break here. As you can see there, after this is underlined, there's a line break. And then here's the paragraph break. There's a line of empty space, awesome. Here's a link, and here's our non-breaking spaces. So here, if I didn't have the non-breaking spaces and I just pressed a whole bunch of spaces, your browser would condense that into one space. But if you use the non-breaking space, just for fun, if you guys want to do ASCII art or whatever, or align things using non-breaking spaces, probably a bad idea. But you can actually do this for fun. Whoops, let's close that. Cool, so that's what that looks like. This link goes to, our own course's homepage. Yay, not Google, but that. Of course, I changed the source code a bit from what it is on the slide. But questions on this? Yay, nay? Hopefully that's not too overwhelming for all this text here. That's all it does. I'm sure you guys can do this. Just if you want to type some text, that's cool. Right, you guys can do this? Maybe? Okay, so let's move on to images, right? Just text might be kind of boring. Why don't we add some sort of images? So for several of these slides, I've linked the titles to reference pages. So here you can see, the image tag, images, image tag, in case you guys want to check out more attributes or get more information on it. So just for your convenience, if you're checking out the slides, you can just click them and we'll take you to a cool reference page. So here's an example that uses images. Looks kind of scary at first, right? Ah, so much text, what's going on? Okay, let's pick out the most important parts. This, the image tag. IMG, SRC. Oh, cool, something.jpg. So there's a JPEG in there and something about Leon. Who is this Leon Rose keeps mentioning? Well, anyway, so this SRC, so IMG is the image, is the tag, and SRC is an attribute, and it specifies the source, quote unquote, SRC, short for source, if you need a, memory aid, or the URL for that image. So here, apparently, it lives in the same directory as my web page. And then this alt thing here is, they call it alternate text. It shows up in case the image can't be shown, maybe it's not the correct type. It used to be that if you hover over an image or something, the alt text would show up. According to W3 Schools, that's not quite the correct behavior, and apparently only IE implements that currently. So don't count on this on, having your mouse hover over it and then showing up cool text. It's just going to show there if the image doesn't display for whatever reason on that web page, and it doesn't look broken. Cool. So you guys can totally do something like this, right? Just break it down into parts, remember the syntax. Here's another example. You know, here's the image source. Anipika.gif, or GIF, I guess. Ooh, I wonder what that's gonna be. But of course, that's also, you know, URL, same as above. It's all sort of pattern matching. You just need to remember, you know, what words to use. Oops, is that me? Okay, so yeah, it's pretty much like pattern matching. Just stick things in where you need them. You just replace out the URL and stuff. And, well, I guess that sort of tells you what this is gonna be, but alternate text in case, for whatever reason, they can't see the image. So let's see what this looks like. Wow, this is really big. Whoa, that is really big. Okay, let me make this smaller. So, if you guys don't know who Leon is, there's Leon. He's from Resident Evil, my favorite video game currently, but I'm not gonna talk about that anymore. I don't know why he's always frowning. So here's a happier image of Happy Pikachu. And if you remember back to our little multimedia section of the course, GIFs can be animated. You know, they just have several frames that sort of get played. So there's cute little Pikachu walking around, tripping, sad for a moment. Sort of like maybe when you guys come upon a bug or you guys don't quite get a tag right. But Pikachu just gets back up and he, you know, starts going again, which you guys should do. You guys can do it. I believe in you. Okay, so that's what that web page looks like. You can sort of map on, you know, where the page breaks, where the line breaks go, and how I formatted that. Not too hard, right? You guys can do this. You guys can do it. I believe in you. So let's talk about audio. Audio, this looks kind of scary, right? No, you guys can do it. It's all pattern matching, right? You guys, you know, just write down the HTML that you need to and replace whatever you need with, you know, your files and your audio sounds and your images. So here's the relevant part right here, that big chunk. If you sort of start reading through it, you can sort of see similarities with the image thing. Hey, look, there's this SRC attribute. And it, you know, it sort of gives this URL thing. So as you maybe have guessed, this specifies the source or the URL for this audio tag. And then for audio, you can have a bit more cooler attributes, in my opinion. You can have controls, you know, like the play, pause, mute, volume, or you can autoplay it, you know, start playing it as soon as the user loads the page. There are other things you can look them up on W3 Schools. So that's right there, other attributes, optional. You don't have to include them at all. If you don't include them, I'm pretty sure they won't be there. So you can just, if you want to make an annoying web page, put music in there, autoplay it, and loop it, but don't show the controls. Then whoever visits your page can't turn off the sound, which, you know, maybe that could be bad for you because it might just stop visiting your page altogether. But that's what I used to do to mess with people. Anyway, fun stuff. But back to this. So what is this, you know, why is there this, oops, your browser doesn't support this audio element, and why is it in between the audio tags? If you remember before, the image tag didn't have, you know, it was just one tag. It wasn't like open and close. Audio actually has open and close. This little message here is in case the user's browser or computer can't, you know, doesn't support this, doesn't support the audio tag, maybe they don't support HTML5 quite yet, then they'll see this instead of like nothing or an X or something like that. So that's just a message in case. And then we have our closing tag at the end there. See, that wasn't too hard. You can just copy this and then stick in your source, and you can start playing some cool stuff. Here's a second example. That, once again, is our source. And these are our attributes. As you can see, we have this new one down there on the second line of the blue box. Loop equals loop. So if you might be wondering, why did I use true up here, and why do controls and loop, are they any different? No, they're not, but so it makes more sense to me to say true because, like, oh yeah, true, there are going to be controls. But apparently convention is you just type the name of the attribute, and that functions as true. Like, they're all the same. You're just saying, yeah, I'm going to have controls. Like, by virtue of putting the attribute there, you're pretty much saying, yes, show it. So, you know, I guess people were like, we're just going to say controls and or loop and just make it the same to, I don't know, make it easier to read or something. to them, I guess. And once again, we have the message in case. Now you can write whatever you want. Here I wrote, oops, you know, audio tag doesn't work for you. And let's check this out, web page. Oh, where's my mouse? Oh, there it is. Okay. Is it working? There you go. So it auto-played, as you can sort of see with the player. Oh, wow, I can control that. That's cool. So it started playing the second I loaded the page. That's the first blue rectangle, if you recall, this thing right here. Auto-play, true. And controls is also there. You can pause it. You can, let me click this. You can change your volume. You can probably move this thing around too, but I won't do that just yet. And then here's the second one. Let's note its attributes are loop. So once it gets to the end here, it'll wrap back around. And shall we play it? I'm excited about this one. Let's see. Do you guys recognize this? Maybe? Yeah. Oh, well, let's turn it up. Yay? Yes, my childhood! Okay, so just to prove to you guys that this loops, I'm gonna move the cursor all the way down here, and then you'll see that it loops. Okay, bear with me for a sec. Okay, let's go to here. Right here. Catch 'em all! Okay, wait for it. It's gonna start again. Come on. See? It loops! Okay, enough of my childhood, but hopefully some of you recognize that. If not, the singer shouted it at the end of, before it started looping. But yeah, you guys can have this awesome stuff on your webpage too. Just, you know, grab what's in the blue box and just switch out your source and add whatever controls or attributes you want to have. Maybe you don't want it to loop, maybe you don't want it to autoplay. Maybe you don't want to have let the reader have, or the browser have controls. I don't know. But yeah, it's not too hard. You just, you know the syntax and then put in what you need to put in. Questions? Yay, nay? You guys can do this, right? Yes. Have some cool Pokemon stuff? No, okay. Anyway, not gonna pressure you. Let's move on to video. Image plus sound equals video? Well, you could do it that way, but better way would be something like this. Here's the relevant part. As you might have been able to guess, we have a video tag in HTML5. In other versions of HTML, you might have had to do some other crazy tags like iframes or embed something or other. That's what I had to suffer through. But now it's so much cleaner. And it also falls into the pattern. Hey, look, here's the source. Source for your video. I'm gonna play something called Res. I wonder what that is. And then here are the attributes, just one. I'm just gonna show you the controls. And once again, we have this message in case, you know? What if the user's browser can't, what if they're still using Netscape or something and it doesn't support HTML5? Well, we're gonna show this, you know, this little line instead of not showing anything or showing some weird random behavior. And here's a second example. Once again, we have our source. It's apparently the same thing, okay. And here are our attributes. So here I have controls again, so the user can pause, you know, turn up the volume, mute it, whatever. But I've also specified a width. I wonder what that's gonna do. Width here is in pixels. I looked it up in the documentation. That's just what it is. And I'm going to loop. Okay, let's see what this res mp4 is. Oh, and I also have, you know, the messaging case. And then, oops, this should have been included in the blue box, but you also need to close your tag, your video tag. But yay, let's see what video. Hopefully this looks familiar. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know if you guys want me to play it. Well, I guess I'll play it just to prove to you that it like works with sound and everything.
Measure by that depth sphere. Why is it still blurry?
Why is
all the resolution we have, making it bigger doesn't make it clearer.
It does on CSI Miami.
Okay, so that wasn't the auto, or that wasn't the looping one. I also turned off auto playing, but you can, that's another attribute you can add. This one is resized. Okay. Yay. Wait, that's the end of video. So here's, here it is resized with the width of, was it 200, 150? I don't quite remember. But as you can see, yay, it's resized proportionally. You know, it didn't like squeeze it and make it all weird. And I didn't show this on screen, but you can check it out using Page Source. I right-clicked here. I'm going to go to Page Source. So these two up here is what I showed on the slide. I'm not sure I can pull this. So parts of this I showed on slide. Here's the third part that I didn't show on slide. Here, the only difference is I'm trying to set the width and the height in pixels. So I'm trying to purposely distort this video just to see if it'll let me. So here's, you know, just specifying the width, and here it is resized. I'm trying to get it out of proportion, but nope, it won't let me. So that's pretty cool, right? You don't have to worry about your videos getting all squished or something like that. And yeah, I think that's cool. Maybe you guys don't share my enthusiasm, but yay. And then if I play this, let's drag this all the way to the end. It should loop.
Magnified.
Yeah, see, it looped. Okay. So yeah, the attributes work, yay. Here's what you have to do if you want to put, once again, here's what you need to do to put video on your web page. Not too hard, right? It follows a pattern. You have a source. You can add attributes like controls if you want to. Okay, let's go on to tables. Yes, tables. Not quite as exciting or doesn't quite fall into the pattern as the things with the source. But if you want to make a little table on your website, well, if you sort of read the text and what I proclaim is like column numbers and row numbers, you can probably guess what TD and TR do. So it looks like, let's see, so between TR tags, looks like what stays the same is the row, so TR, R for row, I guess, and then TD, what changes between the TD tags are, looks like the column. So I can add more TD tags and have like more columns, but here I'm going to have a 2x2 table. It's just a whole lot more like syntax and things that you need to remember. Notice how there's an open table, closed table. TD tags are also open and closed. TR is also open and closed. There are other table tags too if you want to go check that out. Clicking that link up there. But let's see what this does. There you go. So I don't have a border or anything, so it's sort of hard to tell, but you know, here's column 1, row 1, column 2, row 0, and then, you know, similarly, and here's a table. Yay, not very exciting, right? Well, I'll show you how to put that border in a little bit, but we'll have to talk about, like, CSS and all. So, that should be tables, kind of straightforward, maybe. Yay, nay. Moving on. Oh, no, okay. So, sections. You can section off parts of your web page to apply certain style attributes to them, sort of like what David showed in class. So here we have, first I'm going to show you the div tag, which creates sort of a block on your web page, showing the things between the div tags here. So, and then here's my second sort of sectioning tag, which is span, which David also showed. And then sections off the page, one using block, the other one, I guess I'll call it a chunk. I'll show you what this looks like, so you can like you can totally tell the difference in a little bit. But here you can sort of notice that for both I have this style attribute, which will specify the formatting within that section, within that div, within that span. So for the div, I want the color to be, well, I looked this up somewhere, and apparently it's like green or something, and I also want the background color to be blue. So color up there refers to font color. Someone just decided to name it that, and that's what it is. And then down here for my span, I'm just going to have a yellow background color. And then there's random text and other things like that. So let's see what this looks like. So here's our div. As you can see, it like, let me zoom in here. Plus. So as you can see with the div, it creates this chunk. It's an entire like rectangle. And then for our span, it just goes up until where the span tag like ends. So if I zoom out a bit, you can see that this thing takes up the whole like chunk of whole block, and this just sort of ends where the span tag ends. It doesn't take up the whole like line or row on the page. And I purposely didn't put a line break here, and that's why this is also stuck here. just to show you guys the difference between div and span, David also showed you and showed you examples of when you might want to use them. But yay, my favorite's div. I don't know, span's fine, but I just like div. Yay, questions about this? You guys are going to use this to like section off your web pages and do awesome stuff, I hope. Just a whole bunch of syntax. You guys can do it. A lot of copying and pasting if you know you don't want to actually type it out yourself. But cool. So let's move on and talk about formatting. What if I want borders on my tables and I want to make cool colors? You saw a bit of that in the previous slide, but let's go more in depth. Let's go deeper and see what, you know, how do you do this? So first off, let's start with the definition of CSS. For those gamers, you might think it's Counter-Strike Source. I didn't think of that because I learned, you know, the other CSS first. But JK, no, it's not Counter-Strike Source. It's actually cascading style sheets, or a sheet. You know, plural, non-plural. Yay, so just a quick overview. It's a way to factor common formatting out. If you want to bold, like, the whole, all the text in your body, you don't want to, like, you know, go and put B tags everywhere. It's neater, more organized because of this, because you can factor it out. You can centralize it in like another file or at the top of your HTML file. It's easier to change. If you want to change multiple instances, you don't have to go into the HTML and change every single place where that appears. You can just change it in this one other file. It separates content from presentation. So presentation is like formatting. Oh, it looks pretty. Content is actually what you write on your page. Like maybe you stick an image. Maybe you write a letter to your mom or something. And it, once again, not to like hammer this point too much, but it allows for specific formatting for different page elements. So like div, span, body, can't really do head because head is, you don't really display head. And it uses these things called selectors. I'll explain that in a little bit, but a note, CSS can be in line with HTML, what you saw on the previous page with the style attribute. It can be condensed at the top, which I'll show you, or it can be in a separate file. And I'll show you how to do all three of these. Or, well, you've already seen the first one. But I'll show you how to, you know, how all these look. And here's a cool resource. W3 Schools again. Yay, CSS. So in line with the style attribute, looks kind of like this. You know, you just have that, the tag name, and then the attribute style equals, and then CSS goes between the double quotes. And then the second way is between the head tags, which is atop your file. I'll show you that in a little bit, or in a separate file that you link to. So I'll show you that, like, you know, after I explain what selectors are and how you use CSS, because then it'll make more sense to show you an example. So a selector, there's several kinds. Basic selector, that's just a name, jargon, don't be scared. It looks sort of like this. So the first part is the selector, just some jargon, i.e. where to apply, you know, whatever's inside, where to apply this formatting. Here we're going to apply it between or to everything inside the body tags. So selector pretty much like selects the tags or classes or IDs, or it selects the thing that you want to apply. And then these things are called declarations, more jargon. It's the actual formatting you want to do. They consist of properties, more jargon, more words to throw at you, I guess. But these are like what to format. So let's format the text color or the background. And then these have values. So how to format. So here I'm going to have my background be black and my text color be white. Or, well, if I, you know, made a web page with this, everything inside the body will be black background with white text. There's something cooler that you can do called ID selectors. It's for a single unique ID. It looks something like this. You have the hash mark and then the selector, the ID you want to apply this to. So in your HTML document, you'll have something like this. You know, some sort of tag, maybe it's span, maybe it's div, maybe it's like something else. And then you'll have this ID equals ants. Notice that they're the same. So that's the selector for the ants ID. And it'll apply the formatting to what's between that tag with the ID. So here, you know, can't really tell, but 42 is bolded and it's blue. So if I were to make this into a web page, you'd be able to see that. If you put something before the hash mark, you can specify the tag itself. So I could put like div hash mark ants. That'll apply to every div tag that has the ID of ants. But if it's a div tag and it doesn't have that ID, then it won't apply here. So that's kind of cool, right? You can specify, you know, tag and, you know, ID, or tag and, you know, other things, which is pretty cool. So there's another thing called a class selector. Conventionally, it's for a group of elements, you know, like a class, I guess, as opposed to like an ID, a single unique element. It looks something like this. It starts off with the dot, and then you have your selector center, or your selector text, I guess, enter. And in your body, you'd have something like this. As you can guess, it's going to apply to everything with the class center. And here, I've made center be, you know, we're going to align the text center. And like the ID selector, if you put something in front of the dot, you can specify a tag, a specific tag that you want to apply this to if it has the center class. So if right here, where's my mouse? So if I put table.center, then it'll only apply to this line right here, the top line, and not the second line, because I've specified that do this only for the table tags with the class of center. So cool, you can totally like zoom in on your you know, your web pages elements and stuff, and then apply the formatting. Yay! Okay, so going back to how do I put the CSS into my web page? Number one was in line with the style attribute. Here you can put it between the you can put it in the head. So between the head, you do something like this. Notice the I've included the head tags here for reference. You'd pretty much put, you know, your body or your selectors inside here. This is not quite sure what convention for HTML5 is, but this is in case the browser can't read CSS. This makes it so the web page doesn't do weird things. It just considers that sort of a comment, something not to display. But you just put your selectors in there where you see body. It doesn't have to be body. It could be like dot center or whatever right here. And that'll be atop your web page. So there's the relevant part. Or you can also put it in a separate file. But if you put it in a separate file, you better link to that file within the head tags. So here's an example there. There are the head tags. And, you know, maybe your title tag's down here or something. Maybe it's up here. You just need to write this. And this would be the name of your CSS file. Here, I've just called it styles. That's what I just always use. The rest of this, you just need to have there. It specifies some other things. But that's how you link to it. And here are a few examples. Wow, that's kind of slow. Okay. So here's it embedded at the top of the file. So I've taken some of the elements in the other pages. Oops, don't want that. Let's zoom in. So here's 42, the example. Here's, I'll show you the page source here. And as you can see, I've stuck it right here between the head tags. So the end of head is like down here. And here's all my CSS. Kind of messy looking, kind of doesn't look that great. Maybe you want to factor it out into a file or something. But here, you know, I've specified the body. My table, like here I've told it to have a border and padding, so you can sort of see the cells separate from each other. It also turns out if you put a comma, you can specify more than one tag more than one tag that you want to apply this to. And then here I've made my own tag. I've called it Pika, and it's just going to make the color yellow, the text color yellow. Yay, and then here's what you saw on screen. And if we scroll down into the actual body, you can see Pikachu. I put it between the Pika tags to make it yellow, if you make it yellow right here. So that's cool. You can sort of make up your own quote-unquote tags, kind of. And then, yeah. So here I've specified the table to be center. The text inside is centered. Yay, right? Yay, you can specify every part of your web page and you know, have control that way. Awesome. So here's example two, just to show you it in a separate file. It looks exactly the same when I double-click something. But if you check out the page source, you'll see that I link it right here. So here I've factored the CSS out into a different file. I've called it styles.css. And if I click it, you can see all of my CSS, the same CSS that was in the that was atop the other page. So yeah, this looks nicer, right? It's not all in the page source, or it's not at the top of the page making things look kind of not quite organized, or making you scroll down if you want to change something in the body. So just two examples of how to embed your CSS. I like separate file, but if you just have a little one selector, you know, that's fine. Put it atop, or you can just do the style inline. But yay! Questions on CSS, HTML? Less daunting, hopefully, as you set off to make your web page and your awesome stuff, I hope. Well, you can always look back on these slides and copy and paste. Just make sure the double quotes are actually double quotes and the single quotes are actually single quotes, because I know PowerPoint does something weird to them. But yeah, you can just copy and paste. So here's some resources. Here's some, you know, my favorite, W3Schools. I've already shown you guys this. Here it is again. And if you see a web page that, you know, you might want to copy or something, you just right-click it or control-click. Or is it command-click? I'm not too sure on my Mac. Mac commands, but you can view the page source, or you can use the browser and go to like view and then view page source, something like that. And then you can see all of their HTML and their CSS. Awesome, and you know, you can try to emulate, I guess. Cool, yay. You can like totally go to my webpage and steal all the CSS there. If you want a black background, white text, I guess. Cool, okay, oh man. So little time. Let's move on to security, what I've been dying to talk about this whole time. Not that I don't like HTML, I love that stuff too. But here's the demo that will work, I think. So phishing, what is this? Underhanded attempt to sort of get information from you, usually private information, usually through trickery, like, you know, naming a link something that looks real or plausible, something you want people to think is real but isn't. It, as Dan mentioned, capitalizes on human behaviors, sort of like, oh, we don't really think about which link we're clicking. We don't look at, like, the URL, the actual URL, not just the text that is linked. So unawareness, laziness, maybe you don't want to go in and type, like, bankofamerica.com. You just click the link. Yay, examples. Yay. Okay. Oh, wait. Okay, I closed that window with my email. But so I got this email recently. Let me go open it up. Dear WebML Harvard College subscriber, blah, 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 blah. Boring stuff. By the way, I want your account name, email, password, blah, blah. Phishing attempt, what? It still happens. And it's kind of funny. They want me to forward all this stuff to this one website that doesn't look very Harvard affiliated. Should I do this? Probably not. Just showing you guys an example. They have links and everything. It looks sort of, kind of, I don't know, official, maybe. It says it's from this webmail administrator or something, webmail college team. It's from info@college.harvard.edu. There's ways to spoof that. But I just wanted to show you guys that. Move on to the next example. Fake login sites. Not awesome if you're the victim of one, but awesome in principle, or in idea. So my awesome demo, which I'm super excited about. Let me get out of here. So I go on a lot of like game sites. You know, here's one of them. Don't laugh at me, guys. Don't judge me. But I'm just going to show you. If I log in, here's what the login page looks like, right? Cool. I'm logging to my little account here. So let's pretend I'm just a hapless user browsing around. Here's, you know, whatever, their stuff. Oh, hey, I have a private message. From who? It's one of my friends. He says, hey, Myth, check this out. Okay, dumpster dive. I know Gaia has something called a dumpster dive. It's this fun game, right? I'm going to click it. Oh, no, I need to log in. What? But I just logged in. I don't get it. Notice the URL. It looks real, right? Okay, I'm going to log in. And then I'm going to put a fake password here just because I don't want you guys seeing my password. But then I'm going to press enter. And it takes me to dumpster dive. You know, this is indeed real. Hey, cool. Okay, so I sent the email to myself. I'm sure if I was the hacker, I would send it, you know, to myself as the hacker. But OMG, what? I just send myself my username and my password. Phishing attempt right there. Boom. So if this wasn't just me, you know, showing you guys a demo, and say Paperline, my friend or whatever, on Gaia actually sent me that and I fell for it, he would actually have my password. But yep, just a demo. Real life phishing, guys, it happens. That's how people's accounts get compromised on know, serious websites like Bank of America, maybe. I'm sure they have other precautionary things. Gaia actually has a sort of security feature they've implemented where if you're clicking a link and it doesn't go to a Gaia site, it actually tells you, hey, you know, you're getting redirected to some other domain. So I actually turned that off on my account just to demo this for you guys. But they do have security, you know, don't sue me, Gaia. Don't ban my friend either, Paperline, okay, he's good. If you scroll down to the end of his message, he actually said, oh, this is actually for a demo, so, you know, fake phishing attempt. Lol. Anyway, aside from that, awesome, right? People actually do this stuff. Well, that's not awesome. Just awesome that you can't. Never mind. Cool! Demo works! Yes! Okay. Let's talk about viruses, worms, and zombies. Resident Evil zombie? Anyway, virus. Dan really emphasized that it requires human interaction to propagate. A worm is self-propagating. Maybe it sends itself out on email or something like that, or goes through networks or something like that. Uh-ohs. And Dan also mentioned that, you know, a worm can sort of get on your computer and sort of lie dormant, like spreading itself, waiting until the master, or whatever, I don't know what you want to call it, the person who created it sort of tells every infected computer to, like, rise up and, I don't know, attack this one web page or something like that. Or go super slow and, I don't know, whatever the attacker wants to do, pretty much. And then a bit more jargon, an infected machine is called a zombie. So not your human-eating, you know, horror movie monster, but an infected machine who has a worm on it. And if you have a zombie horde, not technical language, you have a botnet. Why did they call it this? I don't know. I would have called it, like, zombie horde, but that's just me and my video game playing instincts. So taking a step back from this, the general term for viruses, worms, and other crazy things are malware, pretty much malicious programs. You know, taking a step back, general term. For example, fake antivirus. I'm not sure if you guys know anyone who's fallen for this. My dad apparently has, and I had to, like, go fix our little home computer. But it looks something like this. So I was browsing around, right, hoping to find something like this, and it takes me to this webpage that imitates, you know, oh no, my computer is infected. So my computer actually was not. It just took me to this website right here, which you probably should not go to, but if you do go to, you'll probably find this, like, this whole image right here, just making it look like this is actually your system window or something, but it isn't. It's just a web page, and it just looks like that to try to fool you into thinking that, you know, oh no, maybe I'm infected. So that's another, you know, one of those human, capitalizing on human behavior sort of thing. But it's real, because I actually went here. I got to that site like last weekend or something like that, looking for it. And then other types of malware that Dan didn't quite talk about that you might have heard, Trojans. What are these? To my understanding, they sort of provide a backdoor for unauthorized access of your machine. So say someone put a Trojan on your computer, they can remotely access your computer using that Trojan. Another thing is called a rootkit. I don't know if this is very obscure, but I just learned about these like last year, unfortunately. A friend of mine, yeah, I'm not going to say any more details, but a friend of mine actually got one of these, and we ran all the antiviruses, programs, and all that stuff, and nothing came up. So I suggested to her, hey, maybe it's a hardware thing, because like randomly it would start to have this really long, continuous beep, and I thought, oh, maybe it's overheating or something, and it's, you know. So apparently it turns out that was the wrong diagnosis, because then I did a little bit more searching with the symptoms, and it turns out, hey, maybe it's a rootkit. So what does this do? It pretty much sort of has administrator level access, so that it's sort of, it's on your computer, but then it sort of alters other programs to think that it's not on your computer, and that it's normal, that if they do find it, that it's normal to be here. So that's why all my antiviruses could not find it for my friend. Really, it was for my friend, okay. So anyway, yes, rootkits, terrible stuff. Well, in my opinion, the worst of them all, because I don't like them at all. Anyway, cool. Oh no, okay, trying to cram more information in. Hackers and crackers. So here's more of, like, sort of my point of view on things, since Dan, I think, did a pretty good job of the general viewpoint. Hackers, there are the white hats. They find holes in, you know, holes and bugs and things to inform the person who has, you know, to inform the developer of the program who has this hole, to so that they can secure it and they can, you know, fix it, make sure no bad people come and, like, exploit it. You have the black hat. Conversely, they find holes to exploit them. So it's like, oh, cool, I found a, you know, I found a, this little bug thing that I can exploit in your program. I'm going to do it. Black hat. And then there's talk of gray hats. You know, I guess you kind of inform people, but you might also exploit. Maybe it depends on the time of the day or something like that. So three types of hackers, I guess. And then there are crackers. Not the thing you eat like saltines or whatever. But these are the people who sort of get an application, a program, and they, like, try to crack it. They try to figure out what makes it work and sort of make it so that you don't need a serial key or something like that to use the program to install the program. So as you can probably sort of extrapolate, a software crack is something that enables you to use it without some other features that might, you know, just stop you from using it without, like, buying the full thing. And a patch would be sort of the same thing. They, you know, you sort of patch up that part of the program or whatever that's stopping you from doing bad stuff or doing illegal stuff. And, you know, there's also this thing about key gens. They figure out how the software works. They figure out how the serial numbers are generated. They create a program that mimics the behavior and creates these serial numbers. So that's also, I'm going to group it under crackers. And then going on to the topic of wares, it used to be that you would capitalize it like that. Nowadays, I see it without that. And these still actually, in my opinion, exist. I've seen things like Core, which is like a team of people. I don't know who they are, but their name is Challenge of Reverse Engineering, and they actually do go and get like software that people like, and they reverse engineer it and probably, you know, put out some cracks or something like that. I don't know. Not advocating or anything, but yeah, they do exist. They're still out there, the underground, I think. And here's just a little adage, I don't know if you want to call this, but all crackers are hackers because they're, you know, going into technology and they're figuring out holes and things, but not all hackers are crackers. So not everyone who's hacking is actually trying to crack software or trying to, like, figure out how it works and give you a key gen or something like that. Yay, hackers and crackers, question? Moving on, cryptography. Sort of the how do you stop this from happening, kind of. So Dan mentioned there's something called a Caesar cipher. That's where you sort of rotate the alphabet. Say you have the letter A, you can rotate it by like 13 and get, I'm not quite sure what the letter is, but you can rotate it by like any number. Say you can rotate it by 1 and A becomes B and then B becomes C, so on. There's the Visionaire cipher, a bit more complicated. You actually use a keyword and you use the characters of the keyword to determine how many spaces you rotate. And then there's also private key, which is what we actually, you know, it's more used than Caesar cipher or Visionaire cipher because the first two are pretty easy to, like, crack. You can write a program to brute force or, you know, try every single possible combination of things to figure it out. So private key is two-way. Say person A and person B, they have a private key. They have this one key, and they sort of share it between the two. So they encrypt it, they decrypt it with the same key. So if someone stole that key, uh-oh, you're in trouble, right? Either stole it from A or B, they'd both be in trouble. So in my opinion, more a better way maybe to go about doing this is public key. It's one way where, say you want to send a message to A, you use A's public key, encrypt it, and then send it off on its own, and then A can decrypt it with the private key. So once it's encrypted, it can only be decrypted by that one private key. So if you wanted to have a two-way exchange, you would need, you'd have your own private key, and you'd need the public key of, you know, other person, B, and then B would have their own private key and A's public key. So if you wanted it two-way kind of, if you wanted to exchange messages back and forth, you'd do something like that. So yay! My opinion, better, but maybe more hassle, not quite sure. So Caesar cipher, how this, okay, so here's just a whole bunch of math. You guys don't really need to know that. If you like math, there's the mathematical formula, but pretty much you're just shifting it. 0 and length of alphabet. So here's the example. Here's what I think would be mostly useful. So say you wanted to encrypt ohi's over there under ptext for plain text, and say your key was 3. You want to shift it over 3 slots. So first you look at O. There's O, right? Let's shift it over 3 slots. Gets you R. So that's O changes into R. It gets encrypted into R, I guess you want to call it that. Next letter, H. Move that 3, K. Next letter, A. Move that 3. Then you get D. And so forth. And you keep on going. And if you happen to, if you happen to hit the end of the alphabet, say, you know, you want to encrypt Z, how do you do that? Well, you sort of go back up to the, you know, you sort of wrap back around. And you move 3 there, you get C. And here I'm just going to keep the exclamation point alone. So, using Caesar cipher with a key of 3, ohi's becomes, I'm not going to try to pronounce that. But yay, that's an example of Caesar cipher in action. You can totally, have the key be like 13 or whatever and rotate by more numbers. Visionaire cipher, here's once again the info screen. There's the math formula if you that's what you like. I'm not a big fan of math, so I'll skip straight to the example. So let's say, because we need a keyword, right? Instead of rotating it by 16 or some static number, let's say our keyword is ohi. This is what we're going to use to encrypt. And what I want to encrypt is I love CS50. No subliminal messages whatsoever. So here's an alphabet table with the numbers of the letters corresponding to their position in the alphabet, just for reference. So how you would do this is, for each character of your plain text, what you want to encrypt, say I love CS50, you would figure out the corresponding character of the keyword. So here you can sort of see ohi, it wraps around. And I'm going to leave numbers and exclamation points alone. So this is just figuring out which character to rotate by. If you sort of remember back to what Dan said about using the characters to determine the number to rotate by. So there's ohi up here in pink. As you can see, O is 14. So I'm going to rotate I by 14 characters. And then L, I'll rotate it by H number of characters. And H corresponds to 7. And then so forth. So here I've, written down the numbers for you. O is 14, and then H is 7, A is 0, blah, 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 so on. And then you pretty much just rotate, It's like Caesar cipher, except you have an individual numeric key for each character. And then you get that. WSODS JS50, what? What's that mean? I don't know. But, that's how Visionaire cipher works, in a nutshell. And now, questions, comments? Sorry, I tried to squish so much stuff into one section and keeping you guys late. Cool stories to share? No? I've got some kind of cool stories. So remember how I talked about black hats and they actually do crazy weird stuff that's bad? Someone here actually found out how to hack ATMs. OMG. So this dude found a way to manipulate certain ATM machines so that they'll give out money for free, quote unquote. And he sort of showed everyone at this Black Hat conference. But in this article, which I read at some point, this was last year, so I read it a while ago, he apparently did contact the makers of the specific ATM machine, telling them, hey, there's this vulnerability, you might want to fix this, because now everybody knows about it, and they might go about trying it and getting, free money. So that's, example of hackers doing stuff bad or good. And also, random, here's a little web page I made. It looks simple, right? You can view the source here. You can see that I externally link a CSS file. I also externally link a JavaScript file, which I don't think you guys are responsible for JavaScript. But 8 days! Do you know what happens? Well, if you click no, it'll tell you that 7 people do know. And I'm not going to tell you. You'll have to figure that out. Or you can ask me next section when I will be super hyped up and maybe decked out in some sort of gear that pertains to whatever might be going on that Tuesday. Thanks for joining us.